Radiotopia.
Welcome to the Kitchen Sisters present.
From PRX.
We're the Kitchen Sisters, Davia Nelson
and Nikki Silva.
Hi, I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life in prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts. The Kitchen Sisters Present is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I am the Edison phonograph, created by the great wizard of the New World to delight those who have never.
Good evening. This is Admiral.
Serve your friends the beer with that new 1952 tape.
Butterfield, are you aware of the installation of any listening devices in the Oval Office of the President?
Today I also got a letter from Angel. In his P.S., he said we ski in 43. I sure hope so. Gee Lou, I hope so too.
As we've been working on our new series, The Keepers, about activist archivists, rogue librarians, historians, curators, and the collections and cultures they keep, it's made us think of our accidental archive. We began amassing reels and cassettes of tape when we were doing oral histories in a live radio show years ago, but our eclectic collection grew by leaps and bounds when we did the Lost and Found Sound series, chronicling the history of recorded sound in the 20th century. We produced over 100 stories with Jay Allison, NPR, and producers around the country, and we opened up a phone line asking people to share their stories and sounds. As we move towards the launch of the Keeper series, premiering in episode 100 of the Kitchen Sisters Present, we thought we'd dip into the Lost and Found Sound archive of voices from fishmongers, presidents, poets, and immigrants.
Lost and found, you got to use two phrases. Lost and found. There's a lot of sound there, lost, and a lot of stuff you don't hear anymore. You don't hear no more of the guy that go down the street and sing in the, to call for the people to come down to buy whatever he's selling. But he sing, you know, the sound.
Fish man, 5 cents a pound. Folks, I sell them all over town.
Come so you don't hear that anymore because people go to the market and they buy to the supermarket. So those are lost. There's a lot of sound there. Lost.
My mama loves them so do I. When you folks think I put a dime, can't eat folk tops all the time.
Well, I usually go about and I look over my box of fish or whatever amount I have and look at the different kinds, and then I try to find words to rhyme with each kind of fish. And then in my hustling and hollering, I kind of rhyme up the words and make them fit together. So people are laughing by fish, that's all.
Is that right?
Yes. Now, in a Spanish neighborhood, I usually sing something Spanish. And I get in a colored neighborhood, I sing something kind of swinging. I get in a Jewish neighborhood, I sing something like, "Buy me a Biff Duchesne."
Buy me a Biff Duchesne. Yes, old fish man again. Buy me a Biff Duchesne. I mean they grand. Now, buy me a Biff Duchesne. I got flounders again. I mean they the best that's in the land.
Oh, yes,
That's a good feeling. So Phillips, everybody want to buy it. Got Kennedy Veterans Hospital, War 24E. Just flat fix and bring you the hottest thing in the country. Real hot and blue. Coming to you through WHBQ in Memphis, Tennessee. And it's Friday night. Tomorrow's payday and birthday. That's a good feeling.
Something about the airways was till this day with everything. We're going to the moon. But there's still something about your voice. Out of the night. Out of the light. Out of the sky. Out of the ground. Here comes your voice. On a little Atwater Kent radio or something. And then, you know.
Everybody listen carefully throughout the territory of Hawaii. Special announcement. We'll be on the air only a few minutes. Everybody throughout the territory of Hawaii, turn on your radios loud so that your neighbors can hear it. We have a special announcement. We'll be on the air for only a few minutes. Here's the announcement. A statement by Lieutenant General Walter C. Short, Commanding General of the Hawaiian Department. Quote, Governor Poindexter has just proclaimed martial law. All civilian governmental agencies will continue to function under the governor. Today, the Hawaiian Islands were attacked by Japanese airplanes. Although a state of war exists, the civilian population of these islands has reacted in a calm and satisfactory manner. The Army demands the aid and assistance of every person in the territory. If you are ordered by military personnel to obey a certain command, that order must be obeyed instantly and without question and detained.
Good morning. Today is Tuesday, November 29th, 1966. And now, from the second floor broadcast room, here are your morning announcements.
Attention all members of any rock and roll group in Livingston High. Please send at least one member of your group to a special interview session for the Lance. Report to room 203 at 305 tomorrow. Your promptness will be greatly appreciated.
Do you have a bulletproof car?
Oh, yes, I do.
Do you think I ought to have one?
I think you most certainly should have one.
Well, I'm going to take every precaution I can, and I want to talk to you. You're more than the head of the Federal Bureau, as far as I'm concerned. You're my brother and personal friend,
right,
and you have been for 25, 30 years.
Well, all that I understand the Secret Service has had two cars with metal plates underneath the car to take care of a hand grenade or a bomb that might be thrown out and roll along the street. Well, of course, we don't do those things in this country. In Europe, that's the way they assassinate the heads of state with bombs. They've been after General de Gaulle, you know, with that sort of thing. But in this country, all of our assassinations have been with guns.
This is the news bulletin. A burglar has just struck a house. You see him, please call this number, 895-2525. Later on in the news, we reported that someone robbed the bank. Well, if you see him robbing your bank, call 275-5325. And someone just got arrested for drugs.
America, when will you be angelic? When will you take off your clothes? When will you look at yourself through the grave? America, why are your libraries full of tears? I'm sick of your insane demands. When can I go into the supermarket and buy what I need with my good looks? America, after all, it is you and I who are perfect, not the next world. Your machinery is too much for me. You made me want to be a saint. Are you being sinister, or is this some form of practical joke? I'm trying to come to the point. I refuse to give up my obsession. America, stop pushing. I know what I'm doing. America, the plum blossoms are falling. I haven't read the newspapers for months. Every day somebody goes on trial for murder. It occurs to me that I am America. I'm talking to myself again.
Excuse me, sir. What's the definition of a hippie?
Of a hippie?
Yeah.
What's the definition? He's a screwball. He's out of step, out of the mainstream of life.
And what do you consider the mainstream of life?
Go out and work. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go out and work for a day's pay.
One thing about your opinion, I'm really interested. When you say you want to get money.
What are you trying to prove?
We want your opinion for the radio.
I gave you my opinion.
I have fun, Mommy.
You're on the phone.
I love you, Daddy. See you later. I love you. I love you. Bye-bye.
8:40 p.m.
Can't go home.
Can't go home.
Till all my fish is gone, stormy weather.
Oh, stormy weather.
Can't keep my four fish together.
Ready, can't keep together.
You're listening to Fishmongers Clyde Kingfish Smith and Henry Dreyer, recorded in Harlem in the 1930s. We also heard Mario Ascione of San Francisco, Sun record producer and sound engineer Sam Phillips, the December 1941 Declaration of Martial Law in Hawaii, school announcements from Livingston, New Jersey, Lyndon Johnson talking to FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover on November 29, 1963. We also heard the recording of an 8-year-old girl who left her impromptu newscast on a toy recorder in a San Diego store. Allen Ginsberg reading excerpts from his poem America in 1956, interviews on hippies from Boston Commons in 1968, and a phone message from a child to his father. We'll be right back. The Kitchen Sisters Present is supported by Quip. Quip is an electric toothbrush that's a fraction of the cost of bulkier brushes. It's got a built-in timer that helps you clean for the dentist-recommended 2 minutes with guiding pulses that remind you to switch sides. Quip has a subscription plan. They deliver new brush heads every 3 months for just $5, including free shipping worldwide. This is one of my favorite parts. It's good-looking. Its little case sticks to the mirror and declutters my bathroom, and it doesn't have a lot of wires and stands. It's great for travel. No charger. Compact. Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/kitchensisters right now, you'll get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/kitchensisters, getquip.com/kitchensisters. When we were producing Lost and Found Sound, we worked with independent producers from around the country, including Barrett Golding, creator of the Peabody Award-winning series Hearing Voices from NPR. Barrett produced this next story, Voices from the Dust Bowl. The original recordings were made by Charles Todd, a keeper we'd like to honor. Todd lugged a 50-pound Presto recorder out to the migrant camp set up by the federal government. He gathered hundreds of hours of oral histories, stories, and songs on acetate and cardboard discs. Todd narrates the story.
Oh, she's all right. That's the big deal, isn't it? All right, we're all here in the recreation hall at the Shafter Camp, and we're going to get together and sing a song just to test out this machine.
The recordings were made in the summer of 1940 in California. We went from Visalia in the north all the way down to Brawley in the south. There were 12 of these huge camps out there, and we went to all of them.
Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from? Cotton Eye Joe. Come from the city, I come from the show. Come from the place called Cotton Eye Joe.
Migratory labor camps, sponsored by the Farm Security Administration, one of Mr. Roosevelt's many organizations that got us through the Depression. Well, the migration began as a result of the terrible dust storms that hit the Oklahoma and Arkansas and the panhandle of Texas back in around 1936 and 37, and it caused what became known as the Dust Bowl.
It come a what we call a red dust storm. It's come from the west. Tore the roofs off of the larger buildings, the small buildings, blowed them completely away, and turned cars over, and the dust was so thick that you could see nothing at all, just dark as it could possibly be.
Such a huge black cloud, just looked like smoke out of a train stack or something. And we had to tie wet rags over our mouth just to keep from smothering. And we had cattle. It killed them. They was out in there. And We would cut their lungs open, and it looked just like a mud pack or something.
500 or 600 chickens, they all starved to death, or a large percent of them. 2 or 3 cows starved to death. So I told the folks in the spring, I says, the way everything's turned out, and money's so hard to get.
He's ready, are we?
I says, I guess we'll just load up and leave out. I've just worried my head off for the last 5 or 6 years trying to make everything meet, and I'm getting tired of the worry.
Going down the road feeling bad.
Were mostly people of English, Irish, and Scotch descent who came over here generations ago. And when the Dust Bowl came, the people in California, the farmers out there, began to send bulletins saying that there were a lot of jobs in California, pea picking, grape picking, so forth. As a result, 300,000 came instead of what they were hoping for, about 2,000 or so. But California got a little petrified and scared to death with this huge influx of migrants coming in. It was far more than they could use or take.
$2 a shoe hurts my feet. $2 a shoe hurts my feet. Oh, Lord, and ain't gonna be treated this away.
When I left Oklahoma, I was walking, me and my wife and 2 babies. We come into Texas and we got us an old rattletrap car.
Of course, we didn't have the money to just say, well, let's buy a ticket and we'll go to California. So we had to work our way. So from Dallas, Texas, we went on out to Clovis, New Mexico.
I loaded up my personal belongings into a little house trailer that I bought, 15 foot long, 7 foot wide, hooked it on behind a Model A Ford, and we started to Yakima, Washington. While traveling through the country and going over the mountains at Grand Island, Nebraska, our house trailer came unhooked, went over a mountainside, and destroyed practically everything that we had except our Model A Ford.
She'll be coming around the mountain, Charming Betsy. She'll be coming around the mountain, Coralie.
The next morning, I says to the wife, well, we've got 52 cents. We've got to get out and get us a job. Wife and I and boy loaded in our personal belongings and drove for 8 continual hours, stopping at every ranch, hunting for something to do. We went and run onto a rancher who wanted someone to spray. My boy and I had never sprayed an apple tree in our life or never knew anything about it, but he was man enough to offer us a job at 30 cents an hour, moved us into a little cabin which you could throw a cat through the roof. The stove was just about ready to fall down, the cook stove. We moved into it and slept on the floor, wife and I and boy, for a week while we sprayed to get enough money so that we could live decently. We sprayed there for 18 weeks and my rheumatism got so bad that the doctor advised me that I'd better come to California or else go back home and get ready to die.
If I never get to see you again, good Lord, remember.
Started this poem in 1939, May the 4th, in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and started in California. In that dear state of Oklahoma, in the city where buildings are high, I laid on my pillow so hopeless, looking through my tin shack at the sky. I got up early next morning, out in the cold I did creep, walked off without any breakfast, and left 2 hungry babies asleep. And then I left that big city, I walked down 60 Highway, I had a good reason for leaving, so I headed for Pacific Bay. Then I seen the Texas cotton and the Mexico bottomless lakes and the Arizona Gila monster and the big diamond rattlesnakes. One night I heard the little coyotes. I listened to their pitiful whine. I wondered if the poor little creatures didn't have hungry babies like mine. I started this poem on the desert, my bed lying out on the ground, then covered up my hungry babies and smoked a cigarette and laid down. Then I've picked peas in California from 2 to 6 hampers a day, trying to make a few pennies to drive that old hungry away. Oklahoma, farewell.
And we stopped off in New Mexico and worked for the snow range, picked cotton for 75 cents a hundred. Mostly Mexicans, and the contractors beat you out of the little cotton you'd pick, so We started on for Arizona.
The living condition in Arizona is mighty bad for a worker on a farm. Where you sleep on the ground, you know, we're just treated as mules and hardly as good as mules. Because they think a whole lot of the mules. And
then we come on over in California in 38. And at that time, came quite a flood here in California. And we landed on Point Conception, farthest point west, picking peas, and people was just about starved to death.
In the beginning, before the government put in the Farm Security Administration migrant camps, before that they went in what they called the ditch bank camps, which were just tents that had been put up by the farmers in the ditch banks. There were a lot of malnutrition. The kids, little tow-headed kids, were in pretty bad shape with pellagra and other diseases, malnourishment mostly. Great many of the people died from asthma and other lung diseases, and they were in terrible shape when they arrived in California, most of them.
But left to me, oh kids, I came out here one day. Spent all my money getting here, now I can't get away.
It was all a big emergency situation, and the Farm Security Administration just had to build these camps. People were suffering in California.
It rained the whole night long, boys, thought we all would drown. We all got the flu from sleeping on the ground.
They put in 12 of them in California, and each one took about 2,000 or 3,000 people.
Now let's do me, okay, I'll hand it to you. I came out here 8 weeks ago and I haven't worked a day. But now I'm on relief, boys, I guess I've done my best. It wasn't for old Uncle Sam, I guess we start to death.
This is a song that was composed in the 1939 Arvin Cotton Strike. Three strikers composed this song, including myself. The title is Associated Farmers Have a Farm.
Had a group known as the Associated Farmers. They were convinced that this was a communist plot. Let me read you just one thing that was said that I took down verbatim. The whole proposition is communist through and through. It stinks of Russia. Our women won't be safe on the streets with these people. We never wanted this camp in here. White men are no good in our business. We like our Mexicans. They don't complain. And they don't ever do any organizing. As for those bulletins which they said we sent out to get those migrants here, they're the work of the Communist Party. We've checked on it. The Reds are burrowing from within. You know how they work.
And every day we
I picked that up from a mayor of one of the towns down in Brawley, California, down in Imperial Valley. I went and called on him to get his reactions, and he was pretty angry about everything. They were angry at me, too. I was asking too many questions.
In those ranches, it got to be that if we talked back or even sang in the orchards or talked, you know, with somebody else picking around there, both would come up to us and tell us, you better shut up, you're not supposed to sing or you're not supposed to whistle, you're not supposed to do anything, like peons. That's what gets all the people here all bothered, because right now they have work, most of them have work, but they haven't got any money to rent a house with. And the first money they start earning, they have to pay it for food. So how do you expect them to pay rent?
This is Mary Campbell.
This is Betty Campbell.
We're from the Shafter Government Camp. We're going to sing the government camp song.
Written by us.
It was written by my sister and I.
Over here in the government camp, that's where we get our government stamps, over in that little raghouse home. Over in the isolation, that's where we get our vaccinations, over in that little raghouse home.
And the government camps that we live in, that the government has never spent a dollar that's done people more good than these government camps. Not even money that's been loaned to railroads and big corporations. I don't think it's helped the country anymore. It's put more enjoyment in life for people than these here country camps.
It's pitiful the way we see some people come in here in the wintertime, have nothing, just sleep on the floors. Just floor. And maybe a few, well, if they had some of them that had a car, they'd get the cushions out of their cars and lay down on them. because the tents would leak and the water would run in, so they'd get themselves off of the floor and try to keep dry in that way. And then we had a lot of sickness, and the ones that were on the sick committee, like myself, I was on the sick committee, we'd make the rounds every morning in each unit, and if there was anyone that needed medical care, they were turned in at the clinic, at the nurse. So everything fared well. We've lost only a very few cases. Everything was taken care of very nicely.
They began as just tent camps, then metal shelters, and you would get a family of seven or eight people in one-room metal shack. But they had excellent recreation facilities and a big hall for entertainment, and even had a library. And when I was doing my recordings, each camp had its own little newspaper put out by the Okies.
The music is furnished by the King Family Orchestra that played with the Grapes of Wrath moving picture. These folks are nationally known in all the camps all over California, Arizona, and whatnot. All right, let's go.
The King family, yes, the King family was the nearest thing to a professional group the Okies had, and we found them in one of the camps. They did a lot of very strange variations on 200-year-old ballads.
Folks, this is the King family playing on some instruments that we made ourselves out of some gourds, like we might call them soap gourds or powder gourds or whatever the old-time gourds might have been. So we have some instruments, Harlan playing the guitar, Charles playing the mandolin, Sid playing the violin, and the tenor banjo myself, Billy playing the bass violin. So here we go with the gourd.
The camp manager would get on the loudspeaker and announce that there'd be an event in the social hall that night. They were going to record some music and play some music and so forth. Saturday nights was a terrific night. They had a huge dance, and it was line dancing and square dance, and a very good band, orchestra made up by the Okies themselves. And it was usually fiddle and guitar and banjo and mouth organs, but it was just old-time country music.
The name of this song is Cotton Fever. It was written by an Arvin camper during last season's cotton.
It was a Presto machine called a Presto recorder.
Along the road on either side, cotton's green, 2 miles wide.
And it was a very cumbersome thing, and about 50 pounds or so. And it had aluminum discs covered with acetate. We had records that were acetate on cardboard, too. And we would always, after we recorded somebody on regular records, we would do one on cardboard that they could play themselves and keep. So that helped. And we had them fighting to be heard. Had no trouble getting them to record at all. And they loved looking at the machine. The kids were absolutely unbelievably excited about it.
This one's a frog. Right turn.
It was a very primitive outfit. Sometimes it would stick, get stuck. It would do all kinds of strange things.
No.
And it was just like a regular Victrola. You put the disc down, the big recording, it looked just like a phonograph record, put it on the machine, turned the machine on, the record went around, and the needle cut the grooves in the recording, and it made the recording. There was no tape at all.
Barbara Allen. All in the merry month of May, when the green buds lay, were swelling, young Jimmy Gray on
bed lay for the love of Barbara Llewellyn.
And as I was walking through the Wilkie camp, I heard a woman singing, and I recognized what she was singing. It was an old 17th century ballad called Barbara Allen. And I asked where she had learned that. She said from her mother.
If your name be Barbara Allen.
And I began to ask around about it, and I found that dozens of people who knew these old songs that were 100 more years old.
Oh, the old apple tree in the orchard, it lives in my memory, 'cause it reminds me of my pappy. He was handsome, young, and happy when he planted the old apple tree. So one day pappy took Widder Norton out on a jamboree, and when he brought her home, that son of Brother Norton raised his gun up and he chased pappy up in the tree.
And the fact that we were working for the government, the Library of Congress, we sort of hinted to the Okies that whoever we were recording, that probably a good many people in Washington, D.C. would hear the stories that they told and hear their music and so forth, and it might be helpful to the Okies. And so the Okies sang like the devil and did a lot of telling of stories.
When the neighbors came after my pappy, up in the tree was he. The neighbors took a rope and strung him by the neck, and then they hung him to a branch on the old apple tree.
Where'd you learn that one?
In Oklahoma.
And sure enough, we did play these records, all of them, for Mrs. Roosevelt and at the White House. We were invited there and played them, so I haven't felt guilty about all that.
This is an old song that I learned from my daddy. Little old man come in from the plow, dandoo, dandoo.
They're very good, and that woman, Mrs. Pike, the one who sang dandoo, it was a lovely voice.
Little old man come in from the plow, said old woman got dinner ready now.
I was amazed at the number of good guitar players. Practically everyone we ran into had a guitar stashed away somewhere.
Peace, old dry bread laying on the shelf. Tommy Clash, Tom Klingle. Peace, old dry bread laying on the shelf. If you want any dinner, you can cook it yourself. Blurn, blurn, blag-a-dag-o.
Yes, it was. I remember it all very well, and it was very moving business, the whole thing.
Over at the sewing room, it needs a woman and a broom. Over by the little raghouse home, over where we cook and can, we hope someday we'll get a man. Over in that little raghouse home, we are proud of government camp. That's where we get our government stamps. Over by the little raghouse home.
That's fine.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me.
Voices from the Dust Bowl was produced by Barrett Golding for Lost and Found Sound. Special thanks to the Library of Congress. The Kitchen Sisters Present is produced by the Kitchen Sisters with Nathan Dalton and Brandy Howell. We'd also like to thank sound designer Randy Tom, the Edison National Historic Site, audio collector David Giovannoni, producer David Isay, sound engineer Jim Anderson, the American Folklife Collection of the Library of Congress, the Gordon Skeen Sound Collection, artist P. Hicks, and Tony Schwartz. Thanks to the National Endowment for the Humanities and the National Endowment for the Arts, Art Works. If you know of a keeper we should honor or a collection we should document, call us on our Keepers Hotline, 415-496-9049, and tell us your story.
When the sun comes shining, then I was strolling.
The Kitchen Sisters Present is part of Radiotopia from PRX.
a curated network of extraordinary cutting-edge podcasts created by independent producers.
Radiotopia from PRX is made possible with support from the Knight Foundation, and thanks to AdZerk for providing their ad-serving platform to Radiotopia.
From California to the New York Island, from Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Radiotopia.